What's up, guys? This is Corey Baker from Baker Forge and Tool. In my business, we do tons of heavy grinding every single day, and we needed a grinder that could take abuse and keep on trucking without slowing down billet production. The AmeriBraid variable speed 2x72 is just that. All heavy-duty parts and framing with well-thought-out accessories that are easy to use and not bogged down with lots of tiny parts. By far, the best accessory item that AmeriBraid sells is their surface grinding attachment. It is absolutely foolproof and the best in the industry. With quick-release magnet system, there is no prying your workpiece off the platen. Very fast to slap a billet or a knife onto the table, engage magnets, and start surfacing with precise increments. On top of all of this, their customer support is outstanding. Eric and Kevin are always available and fast to help with any situation. If you're in the market for a top-of-the-line grinder, or maybe just an accessory to add to your existing setup, go to AmeriBraid.com and use the code HUSTLE100 for $100 off any grinder package. All right, next up, the Hustle and Grind Podcast.
Guess who's back? Never mind. Welcome to the Hustle and Grind Podcast. This is Noah from Eniat River Forge. With me, as always, Ryan from Ryan Chadbourne Knife Works. And sorry, I forgot how to do a podcast. I've been off for a couple weeks here. Our guest today is Brian Hunt from Hidden Rose Forge. How's it going, buddy?
It's going good.
Right on.
Shop's been busy, but yeah, it's going good.
Well, I don't really remember like how to do any of this. I don't know what to do with my hands. I'm feeling it. Just right off the bat, let's keep this low key. Let's just kind of go around and let's hear about what everybody's been up to in their shops recently. If you're a listener of this show, Brian Hunt from Hidden Rose Forge, he's a knife maker, an engineer, correct?
Electrical design engineer.
He does a lot of CAD work with knife making. He's helped me out with some designs using 2D CAD and stuff like that. But yeah, let's just go ahead and just introduce yourself a little bit better than I just did, and let's hear about what you've been working on in your shop recently.
So recently, I've been working on some prototypes for some everyday carry/skinners that have a bit of a belly in them. So it's like one of my Kodiak Nano belly to it and widen the blade a little bit. So I've been working on that, and then been working on this guy here.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, it's a Baker Forge Dark Mai with Tonto, and then in the handle I ran a copper shim through the whole handle in a wave pattern. So yeah, that one has been taking up a lot of my time.
Understandable. Yeah, if anyone's not following Hidden Rose Forge on Instagram, you definitely want to go check out this this knife that he's talking about. He actually created a wave in the handle with the copper shim that then translates directly into the copper shim that's in the blade, and it's something I've never really seen anyone do before. It was it's definitely outside the box. I like that.
Couple orders for chef knives that are going to be going up to Alaska.
Oh, very cool. Right on, man. Ryan, what's been going on in your shop this week? Or actually, I haven't really been on here for the last 3 weeks, so what's been going on recently?
Same stuff.
Very interesting, yes. Mm-hmm.
I've got possibly a big batch, the biggest batch I've ever done coming down the pike, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. So,
is that the one that you sent me?
Yes,
that's cool.
Yeah, but I can't talk about it.
Yeah, understand.
It's just going to happen. Maybe, possibly, they've ordered prototypes. I gotta get a bigger stonewash tank set up within the next week, and I brought my new 60 gallon compressor home today, and I got to get all that piped in and ready to go within the next week. And I bought a sandblast cabinet, and I got to get that set up.
So, and pretty big stuff, really.
Yeah, and mainly focusing on brainstorming how to increase my production, which is partially why we had Tori on last week from Gunstone Creations, so I could pick his wonderful brain.
Yeah, that was a great episode, man. It's awesome to listen back to that one, and the show you had with Jason on was awesome. I was a little upset that Colton was on the show because he did such a good job that it made me feel like crap.
What did you say? Gosh. You said it made you feel what? And I had to Google what the word meant because I'm dumb.
Oh, I said FOMO. It's fear of missing out.
And, superfluous or something like that.
Oh, that was Colton being on made me feel superfluous. It's like why do I even host the show normally? We could just have Colton on. He'd do a way better job than me. Like, come on.
I had to Google what superfluous meant.
No worries, man. Well, cool, man. Yeah, you got a lot of big stuff. You just finished your grinding room. You said you got your new compressor, new sandblast cabinet, potentially a really awesome order. We'll just call it the super secret job. And I'm excited for you, man. You got a lot of really cool stuff going on.
Yeah. And for the listeners who are like, why is it super secret? What are you hiding right now? I'm not hiding anything. It's a type of job where you don't talk about it because the people reselling the knives are not branding them under you. They're branded under themselves. So they refer to it as an OEM job or an OEM type deal. But the only time I had ever heard OEM was this in reference to like automotive parts. So I didn't know what that meant.
I run into that constantly with my day job with like Squarity and Eaton Electrical Panels. They're the OEM, and the manufacturing. But
they still outsource other parts. They just aren't allowed to say that
they're the ones
manufacturing. Gotcha. So yeah, right on. Well, I went on vacation, and so that's why I wasn't able to be here, guys. I'm sorry I missed the last couple shows, but I haven't taken a vacation in a really long time. I don't remember. Anytime I take time off of work or if I miss a show on the podcast, it's usually because I'm doing some other type of work. I don't really take vacations to actually like go and relax, but I took the family down to Arizona. We had a great time. It was really boring because I was just relaxing and trying to do fun stuff. And then I came back and I finished up a knife, which is kind of the end of my order list. I say kind of because there's like a few other things that aren't like hard on the books, but that I've been in talks with people about. But now that one's done, I'm free. And I, if these other, couple orders end up coming through, they're on the back burner, and my usual 3 to 6 month wait time applies. And now I can do some fun stuff. I've got one project that I've been putting off for a very long time. That's a collaboration with someone, that I'm really excited to finish up. And then I've got, a special Damascus project, which I talked about on the after show. One of the shows we've done recently that I've started on, and I'm excited and nervous for that. Some experimental Damascus, and I haven't done any experimenting recently, so that'll be fun. And yeah, so I kind of feel it's weird. Normally I need the pressure. I need the whatever it is, the pressure. I need the pressure of somebody waiting on me to get stuff done in my shop at home. And now I don't have that. So it's just kind of like, all right, now I have to force myself to be creative and do the fun things that I want to do. So it might be kind of difficult, but I'm also looking forward to it. So that's where I'm at. And that's about it. So, Brian, let's talk about you for a little while. We all did our little thing there. So you're an electrical engineer. I've always wondered this because we've talked about you on the show before. You seem to have had a very steep learning curve in your knife making. And most people, first couple knives they make, absolute crap. You sent me, I think, a picture of one of your first knives, and I was like, yeah, that still looks pretty good, man. So where did you, are you just like a YouTube university kind of guy, or how did you get your intro into knife making?
I mean, I started, as a lot of people know, with Forged in Fire, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the show. not knowing much about actual knife making, I love the show. And big thing was realizing that a lot of the home builds, they didn't have very much equipment. And I started pricing it. And I've always been interested in knives and knife making because I grew up in North Pole, Alaska. And there's in Fairbanks, they actually had a place where you could take a knife making class. I never had the opportunity time wise because I was busy with other stuff to take it. But I knew it was an available thing and that you could make knives. And then watching Fortune Fire and seeing that really you didn't need a whole lot to get started. Like I got started with the Harbor Freight 1x30 and a map gas torch. And that's it.
Yeah, buddy.
And made a forge out of two bricks, carved out the inside, and it was just big enough to fit a knife inside, an inch and 7/8 knife inside it. And that's how I started.
Very cool, man.
Oh, yeah. And I found out that I liked it, and so I started collecting gear.
Collecting, yes, I think we've all done a fair bit of collecting. So where did you learn? What was your avenue as far as like learning how to do it?
Biggest thing was probably Jason Knight's Forged series.
Yeah, man.
Because it you figure you may as well go to somebody who really knows what they're doing, and it was a like doing my research on it. That was a very well received. Instructional video, and I learned a lot from it. And I actually learned probably more from his Forged Heritage series, where he just used the hammer and hand hammer, forge, and grinder to make a chef's knife. So that actually probably helped me out the most because, it's video, and there's nothing like hands-on learning for like grinding techniques. But like the way he explained it made sense to me, and like that's probably why my chef's knives have gotten so good so fast is because of that series.
Right on, man. Yeah, Jason Knight's videos are, I've talked about this on the show before, because those four series are where I learned, the majority of the stuff that I know. And I credit Jason with any success that I have, for sure. So I completely 100% agree with that, and I can attest to it as well. So yeah, it's a huge amount of knowledge in a short little package. And yeah, he has a certain way of being able to explain things through a screen that some people just don't have. You know, when we had the Slacksmith on, we talked about the fact that, teaching in itself is its own skill, and either you know how to teach or you don't. I'm sure it's something that you could learn over time, but for most people, you can either teach or you can't. Like, it's really right there in between. And to hear Jason talk about it, he's had both types of teachers, so he knows what the difference is.
So then, knife making and design ideas in general, a lot of it came from Jason. And then as far as leather and kydex, Matt Gentry was his videos on YouTube for how to go about making kydex and getting good clean fit ups and retention. That's where I got most of my information on that from. And then Dennis Tyrell, his original intro to leather sheath making, which was like 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That video was where my starting point for learning how the process is to go through to make leather sheaths. And then he just recently posted, I think it was this last weekend or last Thursday, he posted another new video from his intro to bladesmithing series. And that was phenomenal. And I'm definitely going to be using a few of those as far as it really helps the way he explains it, because it's very process oriented. It's not difficult to do, but if you're going to do it well, you need to follow the processes that work for you.
Yeah, there's definitely a few steps in leather making. I just made my first sheath recently, so I don't know anything. But there's definitely a few things that I found where if you get the processes screwed up, you're like, oh, wait, well, I should have done that before this was here. And now I have to go. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I totally agree. I actually want to take some credit here because I was actually the one that, who requested that video. Because on the Triple T podcast, he threw out, hey, if anybody wants to see anything on this beginner series, you know, what do you want to see? And I had watched his older video on leather making. And I'm like, man, this isn't like Dennis's recent videos. Like, I feel like, you know, he's gotten better in his YouTube over the last couple of years. And I'm like, man, he needs to make another video, but like more dumbed down for somebody like me, you know, who has no idea what they're doing. And so I sent in a request to their their Instagram, Jared. And I'm like, hey, Dennis needs to make an idiot guide for leather making. And so he might have been already planning on doing it, but I'm just saying I requested it, so I'd like some credit. That's all I'm trying to say. You know, that's it. So anyways, I love Dennis's videos. I watch them all the time because anytime I'm on the bike at the gym in the morning, I throw on Dennis's videos, and that way I forget about the fact that I'm bored on a bicycle going nowhere in a gym. It's the only way I can get through it.
I'm super distracted because there's a mouse that keeps popping its head out from underneath my mini fridge.
I was wondering what was going on over there. You're like looking around all over the place, but you're not saying anything. And I'm like, what's going on with Ryan?
I'm trying to ignore it, but I could see it out of my peripheral. So he pops out and I'm like, and as soon as we make eye contact, he runs back under, but he's going to die. I got him on video. I'll send it to you right now.
Perfect. Yeah.
I apologize, great content, everyone.
Yeah. Great podcast content.
Yeah. Wait till the BB gun's right here. Somewhere under here. Yeah. Right there.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm quick enough though.
If you hear a whap later on, ladies and gentlemen, that was the death of a mouse.
I got one the other night. It's springtime here though, so they're like out and about now looking for stuff to eat. And I always feel bad. I hate killing them because they're cute, you know? But they're nasty. Yeah. They carry diseases and they're covered in fleas.
And they like to eat electrical wiring.
Which there's a lot of in here. Yeah, this one's a like little field mouse. It's like looks like a golf ball with a super long tail.
Yeah,
I just sent you the video. It's probably loaded. Yeah,
for some reason, the shielding in at least automotive wires apparently contains soy, and so they're attracted to the electrical wires because of that. So they eat the insulation, and then they end up chewing up the wires themselves because of the soy that's in the electrical wiring. Brian. Can you tell us why that is? Do you know?
I couldn't tell you because I don't know that much about the manufacturer of wires. I'm assuming that's also low voltage wiring, not medium to high voltage.
That's like 12 volt DC.
Yeah, that may be different because I know the like Romex and like anything larger than a 14 AWG wire is.
Interesting. Something I've learned in small engines is that squirrels love eating gas caps.
What?
Yeah. And the only thing I can think of is it's the sugar and the ethanol. They can smell it and they try and get to it. And then once they get through the gas cap, they're like, this is gross. I don't know. But we get mowers in, snowblowers, especially snowblowers because they sit under those like tarps all summer.
Oh, yeah.
The gas caps are totally eaten right off the gas tank.
Wow. That's strange. Yeah. I just did a little bit of small engine repair because on my Husqvarna lawnmower, lawn tractor, whatever you want to call it, the oil drain is like some weird little style of like petcock where it clips on. I don't know.
It's a quarter turn and it pops out.
Yeah, it's kind of goofy. I don't know. Ryan's told me in the past that all lawn tractors are basically garbage, And it kind of shows in the, it kind of shows in the design of this, because even with that petcock, it literally just drains directly onto what I assume you would call like the frame of this thing. It doesn't actually like drain down. It just drains out and like spooges all over the side of this thing. It's the worst design. It's awful.
When you buy those tractors new, they come with a hose that you stick on the end of that nipple.
So
you can put a drain pan out. But if you lose that hose, you have to drain it out on the frame.
Yeah, I found that out because I had to pull it. It was loose, and because you told me they apparently put liquid Teflon on the threads of that where it threads into the block, and that degrades. So then it was all loose, and it leaked oil all over the floor of my shop as it sat in there for the winter. And I go in there and I'm like, well, okay, great. So I got to fix this. So I have to pull it out, wrap it in Teflon tape, and then put it back in. And meanwhile, there's oil going everywhere, all over everything. It's a wonderful design. I love it.
What I've seen people do that actually works really well is they'll take like small black iron pipe and they'll thread it into that hole and then thread a 90 degree and a cap that points down over the edge of the frame. Sometimes you get stuff in that the homeowners have come up with their own like fixes for design flaws. And you're like, oh, yeah, that works. That's a good idea. That's not bad.
Good for you, man. Nice. Yep.
We have one guy who, like, we won't even take his mowers in anymore, but he'll come in to get parts. And he took, like, he has a big zero turn because he's commercial, but he wanted to increase his time. So he took another mower deck, cut it in half, and suspended it off winches on both sides so he can lower it down like wings, and like added a double pulley on both spindles on the end of the deck so he can run belts to the new quarter decks on the outside. It's a fucking death trap, dude.
Oh my gosh. How wide is it?
He made it from 72 to like 120 inches wide.
Oh my gosh.
But you can fold the friggin' wings up and get it on your trailer.
I was going to say, yeah, for travel, I'm guessing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh. He's nuts.
Good for him.
He's nuts. Good for him. He has another one, a Skag stand-on mower. It's like a $12,000 mower. Day he got it, brings it home, puts dual wheels on the rear tires, extends the frame out, and adds two more sets of hydraulic wheel pumps on the back, so it's an eight-wheeler. And like he brought it in for repair, and he's like, don't show it to anybody. He's like, hide it out back. I don't want people to see it because they'll steal my idea. We're like, dude, nobody's stealing that idea.
Nobody's going to do that.
Yeah, that was actually pretty ingenious because he had like a switch hooked up onto the platform. So if you stepped on the platform, all eight wheels would lock. If you stepped off the platform, all eight wheels would lock. So there's no way it could roll away on you.
That's impressive. All right.
It is. Yeah, I guess. It's fucking,
hey, that's professional redneck, man.
He's also the same guy who blew up a rebuilt motor and then blew up a brand new $6,000 crate motor because he took a sheetrock screw and wound it into his clutch. And when you do that on an electric clutch on an engine, it electrifies the block. So he was basically electro etching the inside of his motor while he was running it. So we get it in. He's like, I don't know why I'm blowing up engines. And we took the clutch off because you got to take clutch off to get the engine off. And I was like, there's a fucking drywall screw in your clutch, dude. He's like, yeah, the wire broke. So he just like exposed the end of the wire, stuffed it in the hole, and then wound a screw in between the positive and negative because they're DC.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. Well,
that's wonderful.
That could be your problem.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Brian. So we didn't really talk a whole lot about knives on this show. What else do you do? I mean, you design stuff. You're an engineer at work. What we're talking about engines and crap that we deal with. What else do you do? What are some other things?
I primarily have been doing electrical design work for Winco Foods.
Oh, really? And I love Winco.
Yep. And I just recently, over the last year, been transitioned to one of the leads on the Walmart electrical design. So, yeah, that's been fun moving from a smaller local client, because Winco's headquarters is in Boise.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and we had a say in how things were done because we are the electrical prime engineers for Winco. And now it's, we do it Walmart's way, and that is the only way we do it. And it's not exactly the most fun because some things are not the most clear and could be shown on the plans better, but that is the way Walmart wants it shown on the plans. And there's been some leeway, but yeah, it's been quite the change. And then that is potentially one of our long-term big clients. Cause like this year we have 40 full store remodels.
Oh, wow.
On the docket to complete between now and September.
40.
September. Damn.
Yeah. That's why I probably won't be going to Blade Show this year.
Oh no.
We have 6 projects due in June.
Jeez.
And then also we've got Walmart is being pressured to being on the leading edge of turning to zero emission refrigeration. So instead of like an R400 refrigerant, they're going to either glycol or liquid CO2.
Really?
So they have to change all their California stores to one of those two options by 2030, and that's a lot of stores.
Isn't glycol super toxic?
Yes, it is.
Weird.
But it doesn't evaporate into the atmosphere like the current refrigerant systems that are being used.
Oh, I mean, soaks into the ground, absorbs into the atmosphere, whatever.
Most other refrigerants that are currently being used are way more toxic to the environment than glycol is in the form that it would be in.
Oh, that's good. At least
used in, because like current refrigerants are still very bad for the ozone, and that's why they're switching to liquid CO2, which has its own fun.
Yeah, I know automotive shops, they're super strict with the regulations on R1. What is it, 134A? No,
that's one.
That's all been phased out. Has it? So, yeah, R134A was the primary since, I would say, mid-90s up until about 2018. And then, at least for GM, since then, everything's been going to 1234YF. And... 1, 2,
that's
3,
a
4,
creative
YF.
Name.
It's very creative, yeah. It's a pain in the butt to work with. I much prefer the 134. And there was another refrigerant that was supposed to have been replacing 134, which was actually technically better, but for whatever reason, I can't remember the reason, there was something that happened that made them go with 1234YF, even though apparently it's technically flammable in certain forms. They decided to go with that anyways for some reason. So I'm not a huge fan, but I've never heard of liquid CO2 used as a refrigerant.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. And right now there's some interesting safety stuff that has to be put in place. And like, we're in the middle of a bunch of the first round of changes to switch over to liquid CO2. And, they have a special battery backup system, so if the store loses power, it runs a unit that circulates the CO2 so it doesn't vent.
Sure.
So that's been a fun thing because it wasn't on the original submittals that we got. And so we get to go back to 40 stores and add it to them.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
So that's fun.
While they're being... Oh, my gosh.
So yeah, finding extra space for battery in electrical rooms, battery that's 40 inches wide and 4.5 feet tall.
Neat. Oh man, you gotta love the corporate structure, America. It's great. I'm so happy. I used to work for a larger dealership, and now I work for a family owned dealership where the family actually cares about the dealership, which is really nice, and the people that work there. So there's a lot of advantages to working for a smaller company. But yeah, so you made it sound like you're working for, you're contracted with Walmart, but you're not actually employed by them.
I work for DC Engineering. We're a we're a contractor for Winco and Walmart, and basically we're a consulting firm.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
There we go. The word kind of left my head. But yeah, so we work with Costco, Winco, Whole Foods, did Target for a while, which was very terrible. Yeah, so I got to work with a lot of major retail chains over the last 6 years.
Right on, man.
And before that, I was on the team that did a lot of hotels and multi-family housing, so like large apartment complexes and lots of hotels.
Gotcha. Right on. Ryan, I completely forgot, because I'm a little rusty at this. We should probably tell the wonderful listeners who this podcast is sponsored by. And I just want to start that off with letting everybody know that in addition to what you heard at the beginning of the show, with Ameribraid, you can use the code HUSTLE10 for 10% off of any of their accessories, as well as that HUSTLE 100 code for the machines. And that includes things like the HyperDisc. You can get any of their packages that they have for their grinders. If you just need a frame, if you're just wanting to upgrade your frame to an Ameribraid, you can use that HUSTLE 100. And then use Hustle 10 for anything else on the website and get yourself that discount. And then we also are sponsored by Baker Forge and Tool and the guys at Baker. So I saw the post the other day where they were making mosaic mokume. It's like, Ryan, what was it? It was like copper.
The copper and Damascus.
Yeah, Copper Damascus. And I guess that was headed up by Jay in combination with a few other guys there. And they came up with the most insane patterns. And I think that just dropped yesterday. So Saturday. This will come out on Tuesday. So you've already missed out. But if you get those notifications set on their posts, so you can be aware of what they're dropping and when, they're just going insane. And I know that it's just going to continue now that they have this bigger shop and they have all this more space to experiment. There's going to be lots more of these cool things. And they had that copper Damascus was freaking cool.
Yeah. That shit looked amazing.
Yeah.
Everything they make looks amazing. I mean, what are we talking about?
They know what they're doing. For sure.
Koi can't miss. Anyways, they can't miss.
He really can't. Yeah. And while you're on there, use that code HUSTLE10. You know, you're buying some quality stuff, and we can get you a little bit of a discount. You get what you pay for, but we can make it a little bit easier. Using code HUSTLE10, get yourself 10% off. Don't forget to get yourself some gator piss while you're already there. And then keep in mind that if you're over in the Western United States, Texas Ferrier Supply is now carrying gator piss. So if you're already ordering from them over there, you can get a gallon of gator piss there as well. It's what I use on all my knives. Everything is etched in gator piss. And I think I need to get some more, actually. Because, I don't know, I've been using it for a while. Brian, do you use gator piss?
Yeah, I'm on my second gallon of it. First one, I wasn't very careful with how I was using my Windex and cleaning it before. So it got contaminated. And then I started putting it in a half-gallon container so that I can have half a gallon extra and half a gallon to use.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
And
yeah, I need to do something like that. Ended up
not being kept on, and it got contaminated with a bunch of stuff because I didn't use it for quite a while. And yeah, I got sawdust and lacquer dust from the trim finish in the shop, because my dad's been building the cabinets and trim for their house. So yeah, it got contaminated with some stuff. So I'm down to my last half gallon, but I'm being way more careful in how I keep it now.
Mm. Yeah, that's my problem is I don't have like a, normally I keep all of my like ferric and stuff like that airtight. Cause when I was first reading up about ferric, it evaporates apparently.
Yes,
I've never,
it does. I have another container of ferric that went from, you know, a container, you know, nearly half gallon size to now it's cause I didn't have a lid for it. And now it's like half gone.
Yeah, so that's going to be an issue when you go to etch. It's going to take a lot longer. So anyways, I don't know what gator piss is made of, but I'm assuming there's some sort of amount of ferric in there. So yeah, not having an airtight lid on there, it's probably going to deteriorate over time. So anyways, get yourself some gator piss, guys, and get a sealed container for it. Don't be like me. That's my advice. Anyways.
I've had spiders crawl into mine.
Into your gator piss?
Yeah, like if I leave the lid off overnight, like if I forget about it, I'll come in the next morning. There's always a dead spider in there.
That's random.
I don't know.
You need to get some critters out of your shop, dude. You need to like
I'm like a place. Disney princess, bro. I don't want to kill anything. So I'm like, I just let the spider, dude, there's cobwebs all over. And there's a mosquito right in front of my fucking face. There's spiders all over the shop, dude. Like,
right.
And then, like, before the grinding room, if I would grind in here, then the webs would appear because you can't see them. And then they catch all the G10 dust, and it's like, poof, there's a spider web. Oh, everywhere. Yeah. Spiders are good, though. They kill mosquitoes.
That's true. You need to post some more about your grinding room, man. I haven't seen it since you were working on it. It's all finished, right?
Yep.
Nice. I gotta say, I'm a little jealous about that. Brian, do you have any sort of like dedicated grinding area, or is your shop just like mine, covered in dust?
It's got a dedicated grinding room, but it doesn't have a door on it. So stuff does get out of it. However, right now, most of the mess is actually coming from my dad's side of the shop because he's making a lot of sawdust, and because he actually molded all the trim. Like, it came in as raw material in long boards, and he shaped the whole profile of trim, cut the profile into it, then that gets hand sanded. That's fun.
You thought hand sanding blades sucked.
Well, it goes a lot faster, but you have like a mile and a half of it to do. So,
right.
Pick your poison. They're both not fun. But
do you have some of those little aids where it's like a little piece of rubber that's like molded into like the different shapes that can like get into those crevices and stuff?
No.
Oh man, those things are gonna move.
Yeah. If we end up doing this like a lot, like in the future for other people, then I'll be getting a 3D printer and printing the patterns with like an offset so for the paper to fit in. And you can just run it up and down and clean it all up.
Yeah. My wife got a set of those when she was doing furniture refinishing for grinding like the intricate pieces of like trim and fascia on cabinets and stuff like that. And she showed it to me. I'm like, that's freaking genius. Like, I need to get something like that if you're hand sanding a flat blade, like you don't really need it, but for like handle contouring and like things like
they make those that fit on palm sanders.
No way.
Yeah.
I think it was cool.
I can't remember if it was Full Steam Designs. He was doing a bunch of, you know, he's tearing apart his house right now.
Probably.
And, there's a whole section and it goes in like pads from like probably 3/4 inch to like 1/8 inch thick. Pick your poison on what works best for you. They're pretty cool.
I saw somebody the other day using a palm sander to hand sand a sword. I don't remember who it was. I'm sorry. I can't give you credit, but like, I was like, damn. Okay. I could see that.
Whatever works. Yep.
I mean, so that's a lot of surface area.
Recently picked up a air file and got a stone holder, like Manny at Parable Knives has been using.
Yeah.
And that thing is amazing. Like, throw in a 400 grit stone and you can take a rough grind at 120 up to 400 in no time, and you don't have to, you don't have elbow problems when you're done. And it goes really fast. Like I, when I did this blade, granted it's only like this Tanto, it's only like a 3-ish inch blade, but I took that off the grinder and was ready to do my finish aligning strokes on it in half an hour.
That's still a lot of time, though, man. Like, yeah. So
I generally take longer than that if I'm hand sanding the whole thing.
Gotcha. So here's what I found, because I hate hand sanding, so I'm always looking for ways to avoid it. On the last few knives that I've done, sometimes I'll take them up to like, I don't know, 120, maybe 220. And then I use a leather platen to hold it vertically and just get all those scratches out on a leather platen. Most of my stuff doesn't have plunge lines. So it's not really an issue. I can just hold it vertically on a leather platen, get all those scratch marks out. The one thing that I notice is that is the sooner that I get away from doing my standard grinds, the more variation I have in my flats. So especially if you're coming off the grinder at like 120 with that and then going straight to that air chisel, are you having any issues of like, I don't know, waves or like weird shapes on your flats at all?
Not normally. I generally can get really clean on the flats. It's more for the bevels where I might, and it's more like picking up where I might have a stray 60 grit scratch that was like up near the plunge line. Cause like,
sure. Yeah. I don't stuff put always hides there.
A lot of things, but like it hides there. And then like that air file is great for that. Because it doesn't take off a lot of material, but it doesn't, it's not the end all be all, but it's definitely a help because like it doesn't replace getting even grinds. Like
sure.
And if you have uneven grinds and you want to fix them, you still need to, and you want to fix some hand sanding, you can't really, you still have to use a hardback stick or something like that, like a sanding buddy.
Mm-hmm. I love my sanding buddy. Shout out to Kyle. Shout out to Kyle Daly. Holy crap, I'm wearing his shirt right now. I didn't even realize. Yep. I'm wearing a Kyle Daly shirt right now, talking about how much I love that sanding stick. Yeah, because I the last knife that I just finished, I took that thing from like rough ground heat treat and I finished it in a day. And using just my flat platen of getting my bevels nice and flat, I took it up to 400, which is not what I usually do because I wanted to make sure that those flats, the flat bevels stayed perfectly flat. And then I swapped over to my rotary platen that I have from AmeriBraid.
I have those too. Those things are amazing.
The thing that I love, yeah, it really is. And the thing that I love about theirs, and I don't really know if any other companies do this, but they have a flat platen that runs behind the belt. So you're not running just on slack. You actually have a hard backing behind the rotating rubber belt. And so you can keep your flats perfectly flat without worrying about chatter marks on a flat platen and so much less heat. It just has
kind of that squishy backer behind.
Yeah. And there's just so much less heat on those. You know, the higher grit you go, the more friction you're creating. Man, being able to just have so much less heat at those higher grits is so nice for just finishing off those bevels. And then straight from 400, you hit it with 220 on a sanding buddy with the soft backer that's on the sanding buddy. And those verticals, the horizontal scratches are almost gone, just almost instantly. So it's a lot nicer to hand sand once you've got
got those scratches. It helps out a lot.
Ryan, do you have one of those?
Yeah, I do. I have an AmeriBraid one.
Oh, no, sorry. I was talking to Ryan. Your guys' names sound really similar there.
We all have one.
Oh, okay. All right. Have you used it much yet, Ryan?
I love it.
Okay.
What's there not to love about it? I mean, it's...
Oh, dude, it's amazing.
So the other thing that I'd recommend, you're talking about the HyperDisc on the ad there. That thing is amazing. Like, that is a complete game changer when it comes to shaping scales. I'm still learning, but using that to pre-sand for my flats on like larger chef's knives,
mm-hmm.
that cuts out a ton of hand sanding time too on larger knives.
Right,
using that the disc. Now I just love the fact that you can change it so fast. Like I posted a reel like it's probably not like a month or two ago, but going from a non-woven abrasive wheel to like knock off the rough edges along the spine and the choil to and cleaning up any J hooks in the handle to and then go straight to a buffing wheel in I think it took me like 10 seconds to switch 10-15 seconds to switch out the buffing wheel to the buffing wheel from the non-woven wheel.
Yeah.
It's like the ability to switch and then go from like horizontal to vertical and straight on to 90 degrees to your workbench. Like it's crazy how versatile that tool is. And I don't even have all the attachments for it I want.
Yeah. So do you use the disc portion of it for when you're using the disc, the sanding disc, do you use that on your flats to like even out your edge or are you just using?
So I'll use it on the bevel to pre-sand like 90% of the bevel up to, you know, I can go up to whatever Rhino wet I've got, which is I think 1500.
Jeez. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of also personal preference on what you want to use, but like it gives you a swirl pattern, so you still mm-hmm. have to fix that in hand sanding. But
aligning but it doesn't have any chatter marks.
Aligning your scratch marks is way easier than trying to sand through your. So like that's why I like that airfile because mm-hmm. I can get most of the bevel and all of the flats done with the HyperDisc.
That's super cool.
And then
man.
I come back with the airfile and clean up. If I've got a plunge line, clean up the plunge line or the area around where the plunge would start that I can't quite reach with the disc. And then it cuts my hand sanding time down so much.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to invest in one of those HyperDisc one of these days.
It's worth it. Alone for just the ability to have handle fit ups or like segmented handle scales like this set here.
Yep. Yeah. I remember that one.
That one has and then they had a prototype that I ended up picking up at Blade Show West last year. It's this magnetic fence. So you can set your angle with an angle finder to the on the work rest to the face of the disc, you can set an angle, clamp that thing down, and you're good to go. So like that Tonto blade that I did a while ago that had the glow-in-the-dark stripe running through the middle of it, I had like 19 pieces I had to hand fit on each side. And jeez. I could set that angle on there and just feed it straight in and get a perfect 90 from the work rest to the face of the disc and then used that fence to set my angle. So like it made the fit ups on those so easy. And then all it was after that was take it to a 1-2-3 block on a granite surface plate and double check that I had it perfectly square. So like
that's awesome, man.
It still took a ton of time, but it made it way easier and it's repeatable too. Cause then you have something to a fence to push against to get your
make them all the exact the same.
That. To get your even your final pieces squared up, you mm-hmm. get one side square like straight, then use that as your reference plane to get all the rest of your sides squared up to the face of the disc. So like it's made it way, way faster.
Nice. Yeah, the thing that attracts me to it is the fact that I have a small shop, so I have a dual buffing wheel, and then I have like a you know, like a bench grinder with buffers on each side. And then I have like just like a bench top grinder on a stand that has a stone wheel on one side and a wire wheel on the other. And I could get rid of both of those machines and replace them with one HyperDisc and have all the things that I need, plus, you know, the disc.
The biggest thing on that too is the speed control, because it's got a VFD.
That too. So like, yep.
Yep. I generally would hand buff my stuff because I was terrified of using a buffer. So like, I'd hand buff everything that I wanted like a buffed finish on. Like, right. I had the compound. I just take some steel wool, get it covered in the compound, and then hand buff my handles. So like, you can't get nearly as good a finish, but like, I don't really want the pucker factor of running one of those Harbor Freight or Grizzly buffers full blast, because it doesn't have any speed control.
It could be a little sketchy at times.
Sometimes.
If you're really careful, you're fine. But all it takes is 1 second of not being careful to throw a blade right beside your foot, like happened to me.
Yep.
Stuck in when I was in my old barn shed, that happened to me, and I get stuck in the floor, like probably 3 inches from my foot.
Damn. So
like, after that, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Okay, here's the question. Were you buffing the blade or were you buffing the handle?
I was buffing the handle and it caught the guard.
Oh, damn. Okay.
It caught the guard and just threw it.
Jeez. Yeah, okay. All right, that's fair. Don't blame me for not wanting to use one after that. I probably wouldn't either. Although I've had a couple close calls on a buffer. So, yeah. I'm just really careful and I only buff handles. I don't buff blades. So, it's... buffing blades is not a thing for me. I like a satin finish anyways, so I buff my handles and that's about it. You just gotta watch out for the angle of the dangle. Make sure that you're always basically on the downward side of it and don't get too cocky. So excuse me. Ryan, let's hear really quick from Luke, if you don't mind, please.
Sure.
Hustle and Grind is sponsored by Maritime Knife Supply. Whether you're looking for steel, abrasives, handle material, forges, epoxy, or anything for making in general, Maritime Knife Supply has you covered. And in the U.S. or Canada, they ship faster than the great Cobra Chicken Gooses that their country is known for. Go to Maritime Knife Supply, and when you buy a 10-pack of belts, get 10% off. And tell them we sent you, eh?
Eh? I'm just going to play Phoenix right now anyways, get him out of the way.
Right on, man.
Hustle and Grind Podcast is sponsored by Phoenix Abrasives, your one-stop abrasive shop. When you go to phoenixabrasives.com, click the shop icon in the upper right-hand corner to find all the abrasives you'll ever need. Check out the Incinerator 36-grit ceramic belts, along with the Trizact Gator belts that the hosts of Hustle and Grind use every day. When you check out, use code HUSTLE10 for 10% off your entire order.
Boom. Yeah, sorry I haven't been chatty, guys. I'm still exhausted from last night. I watched the best pay-per-view card I've ever seen in my entire fucking life, and we ordered 150 bone-in wings. And, yeah, it was a long night.
So speaking of relaxing, Ryan finally did it for the first time in his life.
Yep. I decided to take the entire weekend off. I only made it till today. Whatever. Better than how I've done in the past, but yeah. Is what it is. It was worth it.
Right on, man. Well, I'm glad you got to do that. I know that you're really into guys in their underwear trying to,
they got shorts on.
I don't know. Beat each other up, I guess.
Dude, you saw that clip I posted?
It was pretty brutal, man.
Nothing gay about that, bro. That was fucking brutal.
Yeah, it was. It was, yep. For sure. I just like watching the clips and watching like the interviews. That's all I'm entertained by. It's some good stuff. Most of those fighters are pretty funny guys.
They are characters. And I do enjoy a little bit of degenerate gambling every now and again. And I made 13 bets last night and won 10 of them. So that's pretty good.
Nice.
My brother won zero.
Were some of these bets against him?
Well, not intentionally, but like, because you can get super specific. So like, I would be like, this person's going to win by submission. And he would like, he'd be like, I think they're going to win by KO. And so then they would sub them and he would lose, but I would win, even though we bet on the same person.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't make any money. Gambling. I broke even, but.
You won 10 out of 13 and broke even?
Yeah. Some of them are small bets. Depends on the odds. Like one guy, I bet a dollar on him and won $1.06.
Okay. Fair enough. Like,
whatever. Yeah. I'm not like gambling away my mortgage or nothing.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I'm responsible with it. You have to gamble responsibly, as DraftKings would say. I mean, a $1 bet, whatever. Who cares?
Right, yeah, that doesn't matter. I'll buy a lotto ticket every so often, but I'm no good at gambling. I've been in a casino like maybe 5 or 6 times in my life, and I just kind of like mess around with some slot machines for a while, lose $50, and then call it good for another couple of years.
Yeah, I don't go in our local casino on purpose because they have tables. So they've got Hold'em and blackjack and like all these card games. And I know if I sit down at a table, it's going to be a problem. Either I'm going to win a bunch of money or I'm going to lose a bunch of money. And I'm not okay with that. Gambling online privately is much more my style.
Yeah, I used to play Hold'em a lot back in the day. We used to have a group of guys that would do a poker night every so often, and it was very manageable. And we're talking like $10-$20 buy-in for tournament style Hold'em.
Playing with quarters, yeah.
And you know, if you're putting $20 down, or maybe you do like two tournaments, so it's like a total of $40. You know, you got payouts for like the top three people that play in the tournament, you know. Usually I could get at least to the second table, but I'm not really that good at math. So, you know, I try not to overextend myself.
It happens,
shall we say.
But usually we go with Chinese food. It's like a thing. We get together and we watch these UFC pay-per-views and we get $100 worth of Chinese food for 3 of us. And every time we do that, we end up, by the nature of Chinese food, being hungry again, come like 11 o'clock midnight, and then we end up getting DoorDash for something else. So this time I was like, "Why don't we just get wings?" And so we ordered fucking 6 huge totes of Buffalo Wild Wings wings.
What flavors you get on those wings?
A whole mix: habanero, mango, buffalo, all kinds of shit. My guts,
I don't like classic buffalo, man. The classic buffalo just doesn't do it for me. Brian, what's your favorite wing flavor? You're muted, man.
You're so muted, bud.
Oh,
there we go.
There he is.
There we go. Sorry, apparently I muted my headset and it muted my mic. So, no, I don't go super spicy, but I don't go plain Jane either. Somewhere in between.
Yeah, I can put down some wings, dude, and like, but mixing them up and like buffalo's no big deal to me. I like spicy food, but their habanero wings were like you're taking a break. You like bite one and you like have to breathe for a minute and wipe the sweat. And
my guts there's a local pizza place that does a habanero pizza certain times of the year, and that thing. We go for lunch, like a group of us from work go, and that is quite the afternoon after that pizza.
I'm a, not I'm a lot blue of work cheese guy. I had a bowl of blue cheese, and I was just like scooping the wings into the blue cheese.
Oh, come on,
I've been
dude.
Mowing Rolaids all day long. My guts are pissed off.
I'm a ranch dude, man. I like ranch, and I'll dip wings in ranch all day long. We had a local pizza place that would do Wing Wednesday, and I can't remember, but it was something like 20 cents a wing on Wednesdays. So we'd go there, and I would order 50 wings, and I would eat probably most of them, and then I'd just, hey, I got some leftovers, you know, whatever. Wings are good reheated for sure. And man, I don't, like I said, I'm not a big fan of like just a classic buffalo flavor for some reason. It's like, it's too tangy, or I don't know. There's something about the flavor that just doesn't do it for me, but they had like a Korean barbecue sauce, you know, something that's got like a little bit of sweet, but then the heat in there as well, but it's kind of like a late heat. So you're eating it, it's like nice and sweet, and then like it hits you a little bit later. That's kind of like my flavor for wings is something like some sort of like Asian sauce on there that's got like the heat, but it's got a little bit of like that kind of sweetness to it as well. That's what I like.
This was the first time I'd ever had Buffalo Wild Wings. I don't know if maybe when Austin ordered it, he ordered it this way, but there was no split bone pieces. It was all drumsticks.
What?
And that's my favorite.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know if they just do it that way or.
I don't know. I went to a Buffalo Wild Wings one time and I was so overstimulated, I never wanted to go again. And I haven't gone back ever again. We're talking like 10 TVs on every single wall,
yeah,
with like each one playing something different. And there's like 20,000 conversations going on at the same time with all the other people in the restaurant. Like, it was madness. Like, I couldn't handle it. And then the food was, in my opinion, I'm going to get some hate for this. That's fine. The wings were pretty mediocre at that particular restaurant, which just hasn't made me want to go back to a different Buffalo Wild Wings, because I'm assuming that the wings are just going to be mediocre. And I don't really want to sit in a loud conversation box with flashing screens in every single direction for some okay wings.
That's why I hate Texas Roadhouse. Because of the fucking loudness.
Mm.
I went to Buffalo Wild Wings a lot when I was in college, because I sponsored our baseball team. So the whole team, pre-game day, like night before game day, we would all go to, or the majority of us would go to the Buffalo Wild Wings. So there's about 3 seasons of that.
Jeez. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It's madness. If you get overstimulated easily, it's a nightmare. Yeah, it's a lot. It's nonstop, too.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe the wings are better in some places than others, but yeah, they were pretty okay in my opinion. That, and there's too many freaking options. Like, their menu, it's just wings, right? Like, they have like...
No, they have other stuff too, but the majority of they're known for is their wings. They have like...
Yeah, they have wraps and
burgers,
shit.
And yeah, they have something for everybody.
I just remember being like, I want to order wings, but I don't know which ones to order off of this menu, because
there's like three
freaking
different varieties of wings.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then they each come in like, what, 15, 20 flavors?
That's too much. It's too much, guys. Come on. Have you ever seen an episode of a Gordon Ramsay film where he like opens up the menu and is like, what are you talking about? There's so many options. What are you doing? How can anyone read this? Keep it simple. Have 5 different things that people love. And then he tells them to simplify their menu. And then all of a sudden their restaurant does better. Like, that's all I'm saying. Buffalo Wild Wings, if you're listening to this, simplify. KISS, guys. Keep it simple, stupid. KISS. That's what I'm talking about.
People don't like options.
They think they do. They think they do, but they don't. Wrong.
Yeah, that's especially true when it comes to customers.
Mm-hmm.
When
knife customers? Oh, yeah absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. Because, like, I recently was going through this with somebody where it was like, okay, they said, I want this knife with something like this on the handle. And I go through and there's like, yeah, there, but I have like 10 versions of that option you've chosen.
That's where you don't tell them that you have 10. You just pick one and, hey, it'll look like this. And they either say great, or if they want, oh, could it be a little different? Then you bring up the other option that you have. On my website, there's an order page and I make like 5 different styles of knives. I make fillets, I make chef knives, I make a hunter, and like a couple other different variations. And that's all people have to choose from. They can pick from one of those. There's example photos. Do you want Damascus? Do you not want Damascus? You know, like things like that. Try and keep it as simple as possible. And then as far as like the handles are concerned, do you want synthetic or wood? What's your favorite color? And then I just pick a color or a set of scales or block out of my drawer for them, because most of the time they don't care anyways. Yeah, and let's be honest. I have to pick the block. Like, I'm just saying, like yesterday I was picking a block for this knife that I had made, and I got it to where it was basically ready to hand sand, and I do a test etch and I see, you know, what the final pattern is going to look like. You know, once it's ready to hand sand, I can see what the final pattern is going to look like. It'll just look better once it's hand sanded. And then I pick whatever block I think will look best for the handle, because you don't want it to be too busy, because then it's going to take away from the pattern. And you don't want it to be too simple, because you don't want the pattern to overpower it. So it's like, it's this balance. And you, as the person making the knife, have to make that call. Like, you can't just like outsource that, in my opinion.
Hmm.
Yeah, I agree. But a lot of it comes down to like, I do a lot of segmented handles, and a lot of people are asking for that because they want a specific color in at least a portion of it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and that's where I ask my customers if they, you know, if they have a theme that they want to go for, you know, like, do you want it to be natural? Do you want it to be dark colors? Do you like blue? Because I know if it was left up to me or you, Brian, every knife would be blue, wouldn't it?
At least most of them would be. It'd either be blue or ironwood.
Ew, not ironwood. No, don't do that.
Speaking of blue, your block should be there any day. Not you, Brian. Noah.
Oh, me?
Yeah. And your
the
curly maple I stabilized, and then your kangaroo scrotum from Bang Cuts.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait for that. That's so exciting. You can tell from my voice how excited I am about getting a kangaroo scrotum.
Do you say we move this on to the after show?
Okay, I got one more thing to talk about, and we'll talk about it on the after show. So you guys don't get to know what it is unless you're a patron.
Yep. I haven't done them for 2 weeks because we've been doing long episodes because it happens sometimes.
Hey, they were good episodes, man. They were good. So
they
it's okay.
were. I couldn't I don't just th- be like, no, Jason, stop talking.
I doubt the listeners were upset about the length of the episodes, because when I was driving home from Arizona and I was listening to that episode, I did not want it to end. You said that it was going to end, and I'm like, damn it, no, keep going. Like, I wanted to listen to more. So I doubt the listeners were disappointed at the length of the episodes. So you did good. It's all good.
Cool. But
Brian, thanks so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it was a little short notice, but we appreciate you coming on here. Is there anything else that you want to tell the listeners of the main show before we head over to an after show?
Not a whole lot, but if you are ever in need of CAD files, I can be your guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've spoken about this on the show before. Brian was the guy that hooked me up with some CAD design for some projects that I was working on, and it's very reasonably priced and affordable, and he's a great guy to work with. So if you're ever wanting to do some CAD design, but you don't want to get into it yourself, definitely hit up Brian Hunt at Hidden Rose Forge. Your Instagram is shout out your Instagram real quick.
Brian Hunt, Brian with a Y, dot Hidden Rose Forge.
Dot. Okay, I wasn't sure where the dot was, so I didn't want to screw that up. So everybody go check him out on Instagram. Check out some of the cool segmented scales that he's doing some really cool stuff with the weird wavy lines and the handles that match up to the blades, doing some Baker Forge and Tool stuff. It's really awesome. So thanks so much for coming on, Brian. Ryan, I think it's time to play us out.
Yeah, see everybody next week.
Next week. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Goodbye.